Gospel Tangents needs your support. Please consider donating to our website, gospeltangents.com. We'll use your donation to help produce other podcasts and professional documentaries such as this. Welcome to Gospel Tangents Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. We'll continue our discussion with Dr. Mark Staker, an anthropologist at the LDS Church History Library in Salt Lake City. In part two, we'll discuss Black Pete's mission for the LDS Church, his introduction of ecstatic religious practices into the Mormon community, such as speaking in tongues, and his attempts to marry within the predominantly white community of Kirtland. Let's listen in on our conversation. Let me ask you about one of the things that you wrote in your book, because I wanted to kind of know when this came. So one of the things you mentioned in your book was the fact that Black Pete had an angel, a letter from heaven from a black angel. Could you talk about that?
Those activities are important because they suggest some things about his involvement with African religious tradition as well, and that is that part of this religious enthusiasm that was going on is that they were receiving letters from angels, but these letters provided them authority as well. Oliver Cowdery, when he first comes to Ohio, says that he has seen an angel and that they have authority. We understand that today to mean, John the Baptist. He talks about John the Baptist having come and given authority to baptize. And that this receiving letters from heaven is a playoff of that. They're also receiving kind of authority and direction to do things. And so they follow on that. And these letters appear to be ethereal. They're not tangible. They're not things that other people see, but only the person that receives it, comes down and they're able to see that and read that letter and act. But they're also, Black Pete seems to put kites up in the sky and he's flying things that have faces of various kinds. And it seems that this is part of the African tradition that his mother brought with her, a West African religious tradition, and there are African potters who will put faces on pots and other things, introduce that into the American potting tradition, the pottery tradition, and it appears that Black Pete's kind of keying in on some of that as well, and these letters coming down from heaven. And this idea of flying, some people say, oh, he claims he can fly. That's part of that slave religious tradition where some people can fly at night. They leave their bodies to do it typically, but it appears that he believes that that's something that he can do as well because of his previous religious background as a child or before he gets to Ohio. So those are elements that also kind of come into the story as he moves forward. Now, Joseph Smith, when he arrives in Kirtland and begins to receive a revelation, it dismantles this ecstatic religious tradition that has been introduced and the religious enthusiasm that's going on to an extent. It stops. No more speaking in tongues, no more rolling around. It takes a little bit of time to do that, and so there's still, even after Joseph arrives, they hold a special priesthood meeting up in Schoolhouse on the Morley Farm, and some of that, those events continue to happen, but not long after that, they disappear from the community. And it turns out that a couple of those early converts that head off on a mission to the east baptize Brigham Young.
Oh, wow.
And Brigham Young is introduced to speaking in tongues in Pennsylvania. By these missionaries they're serving in Pennsylvania, but they move up north and they introduce it in Pennsylvania as well. Then it's Brigham Young that brings that tradition back to Kirtland. It's died out, and when he comes there, he speaks in tongues at a meeting at the Johnson Inn. It's the local tavern there at the crossroads, and on the upper floor of the tavern, they hold this church meeting, and here he's speaking in tongues. and Joseph Smith declares it to be of God, and that introduces it back into the community, and it, oh, it wow. spreads.
So how long was it out of favor there in Kirtland, approximately?
Approximately a year.
Okay.
Almost a year that they're not practicing. So it's still very much in people's memory. There may be some people still practicing it. I may be overstating the case by saying it has died out, but there's no evidence that it's continuing until Brigham Young brings it back in to the community. And there's some suggestion by some late, you know, that came about at the same time that he introduces it to the community because they're not aware of this earlier practice. And so that supports the idea that it has died out. People aren't aware of it until he introduces it back in to the community. And so speaking in tongues comes back into the community, but Black Pete doesn't seem to be taking as central a role in anymore in what's going on. Is it because Joseph Smith arrives, he's the prophet and he's the leader, so they don't look to Black Pete as a prophet? Or is it because there's some negative backlash from this earlier experience of the ecstatic religious tradition that he introduces into the community? I don't know.
Let me tie into that again. So he joins the church, if I recall, is about November of 1830.
Yeah.
So it's less than 6 months after. And then, as I recall in your book, didn't he go on a mission or something? And there's a something in, I don't even know where Ashtabula is. Is that close by?
Ashtabula is a good day's journey for them, east of where they're at. And he and three other individuals, they all call themselves on missions. Well, no, let me step back. Everybody that joins the church, everybody meaning in this case the men that join the church, are expected to go out and preach the gospel. And they're ordaining them elders. John Murdoch, when he's baptized, he's immediately ordained an elder, and he goes out, never having read the Book of Mormon, having no idea what the church is really all about, other than that he knows what Oliver Cowdery's told them about authority and about the angel Moroni and things coming. And so presumably he's sharing that information with people. There's some discussion of Christ appearing in America, and so they're telling some of the stories, you know, from the Book of Mormon. But he's going out and he baptizes up within a week, 70 individuals.
You know, this is
John Murdoch.
Okay.
And so others are out, they're preaching, they're baptizing quite a few people. Black Pete is one of these individuals that goes out and is preaching as well. He joins three other individuals, and they all go as this group of four that are very interested in religious enthusiasm. And so that might be what ties them together. But what this also suggests is that since those that we know about were ordained elders, such as John Murdoch, it could be that Black Pete had been ordained an elder as well to go out, and he's assigned to preach just like these others are supposed to go out and preach. But he clearly is doing that.
So do we have any record that he baptized anyone? Or I actually had somebody ask me, is it likely that if he did baptize that they were white people or black people? Do you know that?
A great question, and I don't know their race, but it does is this group of four are baptizing people, so presumably he is one of those baptizing individuals.
Okay, so he went out with John Murdoch, and do you know who the other
Well, is Burr Riggs is the one that he's most closely associated with, and then a couple of other individuals that go out with them. John Murdoch's out on his own. It doesn't, at least as far as I can tell, he doesn't have a companion while he's preaching, and they don't really get that instruction to go out two by two until a few months later.
Okay, so it sounds like we've got better documentation for John Murdoch than we do for Black Pete.
Well, John Murdoch's journal survives.
Oh.
His missionary journal, and so where he's going, who he's preaching to, how many individuals he's baptizing, he records that in his journal. If Black Pete kept a journal, it doesn't survive. Some of his associates say he was illiterate, which seems to make some sense because it was illegal for slaves to learn to read, and so he probably didn't learn to read when he was younger. But then again, he's receiving these letters from heaven. But if they're, you know, if they're spiritual letters, maybe he doesn't need to actually know how to read these letters either. So those are questions that we really can't answer from the sources.
But at any rate, he ended up in the newspaper. Is that right?
He ends up in a bunch of newspapers mention him.
A bunch.
Yeah, because he's colorful, he's different, and if you want to write negative things about the Mormons, he becomes a lightning rod to do that. And so because of that, he ends up casting a little bit of a negative light on Mormonism. You know, he claims that he can fly, ha ha ha, you know, look at what these Mormons believe. He ends up running off of a cliff and kind of falling down into the trees. Look at these silly things Mormons are doing. He was chasing after one of these letters when that happened, you know, and so he kind of wasn't paying attention to what was in front of him. He's doing the other things that seem to be a little bit odd or strange. Look what these Mormons believe. And so he becomes kind of the lightning rod of negative focus. And the fact that he's black also adds to the negativity, because most of the people in the Western Reserve there in northeastern Ohio don't look kindly toward blacks. Most of those, you know, the white settlers, and there aren't that many free blacks in the community at the time. And so it all just adds to kind of that negative patina, and that's why he's selected as the person that they mention most often in the record. And that's how we're able to learn things about him. But it also adds to the likelihood that when Joseph Smith comes and when they establish the church kind of more formally there in Kirtland, that he's going to be kind of pushed more into the background, because he's become this negative focus. And so sadly, over a very short period of time, he disappears from the record. We don't know what happens to him. Where did he go? Did he stay there? It doesn't seem to. There's no black person in the census records or in the other local records that seems to fit him after this period of time. But I can't figure out where he's gone to. It would be great to be able to follow him through and figure out, you know, the later parts of his life and how Mormonism continues or doesn't continue to influence in him, or how he continues to find, you know, meaning in the rest of his life. But he disappears from the record.
Hmm. Okay, one other story I just want to highlight really quickly is you mentioned that he sort of had a romantic relationship with Frederick Williams' daughter, if I recall. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think it was less romantic than it was a hopeful romance on his part. And that there are some of the women that he associates, well, all of the women that he's associated with are white. Because he appears to be the only black person, as far as we know, that's part of this community. And he's interested in marriage, and he claims to have received a revelation to marry one of the Williams daughters. And she says, you know, when I receive a revelation, well and good, but she didn't feel that she'd received a revelation to do the same. And the same story that many sorry young men have suggested over their lives is they receive revelation that a young woman doesn't receive in terms of marriage. But she didn't receive the same revelation. She turned down his marriage proposal. He later wants Joseph Smith to receive revelation on his behalf to marry somebody. And as far as we know, that never happened. He doesn't get married within the community, and we don't know, you know, where he went from there. So that's that's just one of those stories that is told, but it also kind of fits within the larger free love story that is often told by outsiders, and the hints that perhaps there was some discussion of polygamy there at the time, but it's hard to sort out really how that all happened.
Now, wasn't there a big age difference as well between...
Yeah, he would have been twice the age of the young lady that he was hoping to marry. So.
Okay. So that probably didn't sit too well with very many people, besides the fact of his race.
I'm sure that probably was a factor as well, but we don't know because we don't have any responses how that all played out.
Well, I know I spoke with Paul Reeve recently, and he talked about amalgamation, mixed-race marriage was an awful thing, both in the South and in the North. You know, Ohio would be considered the North, obviously. Was there any talk about that in the early Kirtland?
No, he's correct. It would be national news, and it did happen occasionally. It ended up in the national papers that some white person married a black person. But Emma's aunt had done exactly that.
Emma Smith's
aunt to Hale had married Joseph Wallace, a black man.
Oh, I did not know that.
Nobody did. They kept it quiet. It wasn't even, by law, they had to announce it in the newspaper, the marriage, but they didn't mention race, of course, in that official announcement. It was very difficult to sort that out. He comes from the Wallace family were Revolutionary War heroes. You know, they were part of the black freedom fighters that had fought in that war. He appears to be a successful, comfortable individual in the community. She elected to marry him. It caused a stir in their religious denomination. And then we can't find out any, or at least I haven't been able to find out any more about what happened after that, or where they go, or anything. They kind of disappear from the records.
So Emma didn't talk about it, so it sounds like she didn't really approve of that?
I don't know. She approved or didn't approve, or those are things.
I know, talking with Paul, that one of the big knocks against Mormons was the fact that they were so open to, well, I know that they married Indians, and it sounds like they were a lot more open to even mixed race marriages.
Could well have been early on open to those kinds of things. And,
wow.
But don't know.
Well, that's interesting. Wish we knew a little bit more about what happened after Kirtland with him, but these are fascinating insights. I hope you enjoyed part two of our discussion about Black Pete. In part three, we'll discuss allegations of polygamy within the Kirtland community. In the heading for section 132 of the Doctrine and Covenants, it says that some of the parts of polygamy revelation were known as early as 1831. Is there evidence of this?
Followed up with another revelation that suggests to me that it's a response to what Black Pete has introduced in terms of polygamy at the time.
So wait a minute, you're telling me that Black Pete may have been responsible for introducing polygamy into the Kirtland community?
I believe so. And I believe that's why often, you know, we say, well, Joseph Smith was translating the Bible and he wants to know about Abraham, you know, and his wife.
I hope you'll tune into our next conversation with Dr. Staker. For more information, please subscribe to our website, gospeltangents.com, where you can purchase a transcript of this podcast for just $3. You can also get one on amazon.com. Please subscribe to iTunes, Stitcher, or YouTube to get an updated interviews. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you'll continue to support us here at GospelTangents.com.